Now, as we pass Kings, the name I'm going to choose to talk about here is Alan Turing, who wrote On Computable Numbers. So we're back to computing. And he was a member of this college here. Unfortunately, homosexual, he chose to commit suicide before continuing to make more of a name for himself. But he's very much one of the stars of cracking the Enigma code during the war, because he was seconded from Cambridge to go and work at Bletchley, at Bletchley Park, on the Enigma code. But it is one of the stories that we don't know the truth of or not, but when you think of the Apple logo that has a bite out of it, there are people who do think that that is actually connected with Turing. That was his chosen way of committing suicide. He put cyanide onto an apple and died eating this. And they do wonder whether the Apple logo is showing that. Looking at the front of the college, we're admiring the 19th century facade, or the 19th century building, of Thornville and Caius College. Now, many of the buildings that we now call college started as a hall. The hall was the building where the students were housed. And just after the Black Death, the plague, in the middle of the 14th century, three colleges were founded in Cambridge. One was to promote the training of priests, and two to train more lawyers, because there were a lot of legal arguments going on with the few people who were left over land issues and whatever. They needed more lawyers. And this is how Gonville Hall came about. And when you look at the statues, the lower figure is Edmund Gonville, who founded Gonville Hall. Now, he didn't actually give his college a lot of money. So a few years later, we have Bishop Bateman on the right assisting and refounding the college, but the name stayed the same as Gonville Hall. We move on to the 16th century, we get the third figure, and this is John Caius. And John Caius had been an undergraduate here, and he'd stayed for a while, been a fellow, and then had gone off to further his medical studies. But the thing about England was it was very difficult to study anatomy. The place to go was Padua in Italy. So he went off to Padua and then came back, and as a wealthy physician, doctor, he came to visit his college and decided it was very run down, and he boosted the funds by giving money and creating a new court, and they added his name to the college. It was still a hall in those days, it didn't become a college until later. But he had by this time Latinized the spelling of his name. So instead of being any way of spelling Dorky, so K-E-Y-K-E-E, it became C-A-I-U-S, Caius. But it's still pronounced Caius because his name was Caius. And he's holding a gateway that he gave here, one of three. He had this idea of showing student life, that you enter with humility. So the first gate says with humility, humilitatis. The second one, we hope you're working, so virtutis, with virtue. And the last one is the gate of honour, which if you go down to the left, in fact we could go down that way. No, we won't, because we'll miss some things that way if we go that way. If you go that way, you will find a full-size gate that he is holding there. But as well as being a doctor who treated people, he was the first person to write a treatise on one single illness, and this was the sweating sickness. So before that time, you could read other people's theories about lots of things in one book, but he picked one illness to study. So it's the beginning of study on one particular illness, and getting away from magical things, of actually seeing what happens and how to treat it. One of the fellows here is worth mentioning, because he's still very much alive and still very much a topical name, and that is Professor Stephen Hawking, the theoretical physician who analysed black holes. Now, his department is out on Wilberforce Road, the mathematics, the math sciences out there, but he is a fellow in this college as well. The last one of the heads to mention is this one between these two drain pipes above the blue bike, Wollaston. And he was the one who discovered palladium, rhodium. There's Wollaston, Wollstonite named after him. Going back to Harvey, if I come this side of you, looking at the statue of Harvey. Harvey's work was on the circulation of blood. He was determined to establish what blood did in the body, because before he came up with his theory of how blood circulates, they had various theories about what the parts of the body did, whether the liver was doing something, whether the stomach was doing something, and blood circulating in different ways. But he actually worked it out. And when you look at the statue, he's holding in his right hand the treatise, sort of coiled piece of paper, which is De motu cordis in animalibus sanguinis, so on the circulation of blood in animals. And the way that he did this, in his left hand, he's showing you the heart that he studied. But often he was studying cold-blooded creatures as they were dying. So he was cutting open frogs and cold-blooded snakes so that he could actually see the heart pumping and see what was happening. He relied on something that he couldn't prove. They didn't have microscopes sufficient to show capillary action, but he knew that these must exist. They weren't proved at the time he wrote his thesis, though, so he didn't necessarily get the belief and the acclaim due to him until later, when they could actually prove that what he said was true. This is a college founded by, not Henry VIII, but his grandmother, Margaret Beaufort, 1509, the year she died. It took another couple of years before they actually started any work. And at that time, you would have seen a court surrounded by red brick buildings, including across where the markings are on the lawn. That was the original chapel. Now, in the 18th century, they covered the red brick facing me. So that isn't a stone building, it's just it's just ashlar on top of the red brick. But in the 19th century, they pulled down the chapel and rebuilt, and you've got something much bigger, much grander than there would have been in the first place. But on the outside, statues, and the one that I want to pick out is coming from the door end, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so straight across from where we are, the man with the nice brimmed hat, with tall hat, and it's somebody holding a bar of something. And this is William Gilbert. Now, William Gilbert was the one magnetic pole, so he's actually holding the magnet there. He also worked out that you couldn't demagnetize something that was a magnet by rubbing it with garlic. I think that's lovely, you know, you talk about sort of magic coming into things. But he found that you could use lodestone to magnetize things, and he wrote De Magneta, which was not bettered until we get to Michael Faraday. So nothing more was discovered about magnetism after him. I'm going to take you around an William Gilbert, we have a memorial park to him here. And then we have this one, Sir Charles Algernon Parsons. So he's one of my favourite characters. He worked out how to make a turbine engine, a steam turbine engine. And he was trying to prove that this was a very useful thing to put into a boat, because it would power it. And nobody was listening to him. So he put a steam engine, turbine engine, into a ship called the Turbinia. And he took it to Spithead, where Queen Victoria was reviewing her navy. And this little ship, Turbinia, was whizzing around between all the other ships, gate-crashing the party, and they tried to stop it, and nobody could catch it. So his point was made. Ambrose Fleming, thermionic valves, to talk about there. Another name here is John Dee, which goes back before William Gilbert. Now, John Dee, I came across him in Prague Castle. People were well-travelled in this time. We're talking 1520s, and he was very much an alchemist. He did what we call scrying, looking in crystal balls, telling people's fortunes. Even the Queen, it would have been Queen Mary, employed him to see whether it was an auspicious day to do something in particular. But really an early scientist. Interestingly, we didn't use the word scientist until the 19th century. And William Whewell of Trinity College came up with this term and said, I think we should start calling them scientists, these people who study natural philosophy. Deary, and I won't even attempt to explain what that is.
Who was that?
Paul Dirac.
Oh, yes.
Was a member of this college. I know Einstein himself was baffled by him and said he was sort of verging on, is it brilliance or is it madness, the theories that he was coming up with. But for them that know, Paul Dirac, an important man. When we talk about Trinity, we use the word great a lot. It's the greatest area occupied by a college. It has the greatest size court. It has the greatest number of Nobel Prize winners, 31. Out of 31 colleges, this one college has 31. Total in Cambridge is about 84. The present master is an astronomer. In fact, he is the Astronomer Royal, Sir Martin Rees, who is also president of the Royal Society. His predecessor was Amartya Sen, another Nobel Prize winner. Many of the names that we mentioned from the Cavendish were Nobel Prize winners associated with Trinity College. So it's very important in the field of science. And if you go into the college, into the chapel, and have a look around, there are brass plaques all around the wall, and you can pick out names like Rutherford Kapitza, J.J. Thompson. There's a statue of Isaac Newton holding his prism because he was the one who showed that you can shine light through, and it's made up of other colours. Who else have we got?
Bacon. Sir Francis Bacon,
who we have to thank for the sort of study of science. He wrote about it, rather than doing it, he wrote about it. And do you want to say something about Francis Bacon? You probably know more about him and what he actually did. Probably use freezing, use ice as a way of preserving things. And there's a story of how he decided to stuff a chicken with ice to see what would happen. And in doing so, he caught a chill, which actually led to pneumonia, and he died from that. So, you know, his search for scientific proof actually led to his death, which was rather sad. Isaac Newton himself did another of his experiments in Trinity, in the second courtyard, Neville Courtyard, which has a cloister down either side. And it is said that he stood at one end and clacked his heel and timed the length of time it took for the echo to come back. And thus he found out the speed of sound.